Okay, we are now officially taping. I forgot to turn this on quite early enough. We're just reviewing from last week. So will the rapture be partial or full? There's absolutely no place in Scripture at all that says that the rapture is going to be partial. Okay, and we went through all these, so you can see those in the notes. Okay, so what we're doing is we're going to give you eight reasons. We looked at three of these last week, so we're going to quickly review those. Because again, you have the notes, and I think I gave you enough in there. I think a big one is the fact that in Revelation, essentially 6 to 18, the word church is not mentioned at all. But in the first three chapters, they use the word 19 times. Okay, so there's something that happened after chapter 3. If you remember, especially chapters 2 and 3, there's the letters to seven churches, physical churches that John was writing to, who would have gotten this and go, oh, I'm at Thyatira, so here he's writing a little note to me. So the word church used over and over and over and over and over again, and then all of a sudden it is not used at all. I wouldn't want this to be the only reason I believe in a pre-trib rapture, but I think it's a pretty strong one. Okay. The second one. Why have a rapture if it's post-trib? Why have a rapture if we're just coming right back down to start the kingdom? Why not he just come down and start the kingdom and we're all there, we're happy, and there we go? Why? We don't even need a rapture, okay, if it's post-trib. Mid-trib, we'd still say, yeah, we need a rapture because we need to be pulled out. So this just eliminates, I think, post-trib. It's pointless to have a rapture then if we're not really going anywhere. We're just sort of going up, meeting him, and coming right back. So, yeah.
If we're coming right back down, what are we coming back down to?
Back to this earth.
Back to our homes, what do we do?
Oh. That's part of the issue with it. We know that at the very end, we're coming back to that Romans 14, I go to prepare a place for you, the heavenly city. So that's where our residence will be. But yeah, that's a great question. If we're not really going anywhere and we're coming right back, we don't see the heavenly Jerusalem until later in the book. So I don't know where we would come back. I guess I just go back to Clear Spring. But yeah. Yeah, I kind of thought, I mean, I love Clear Spring, but I figured that heaven would be better than that. It's a great question. If it's this, I don't have an answer for it. Yeah. Makes perfect sense if it's pre-trib. There's just a couple. This one was kind of, we paused on that a little bit. Where do millennial children come from? So again, we're trying to think of people, human beings who are still capable of producing children. At the rapture, all saved people are taken. So you have saved people who now aren't going to reproduce. You have on the earth only unsaved people. During the tribulation period, a lot of those people come to know Christ. A lot of those are killed. But a number of those make it through the tribulation period. Okay. When Jesus comes back, then they are still perfectly capable of having children. I mean, if they're the right age and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, so they are the ones who during the millennium will populate the millennium with kids, many of whom are going to reject Jesus. Because even in the millennium, they still have to put faith in Christ, just like you and I do right now. Just like Abraham had to do. So don't picture a different form of salvation for Old Testament than New. It's always been by faith. Okay, so we have an issue. If there's no people left here who haven't had new bodies, there's no way to get new kids. Yeah?
Could you explain number two, no need for sheep?
Yeah. If the rapture, and again, I'm mostly dealing with post-trib, then there's no time for it. And in a sense, there's no need for that because the Lord in the rapture has taken care of what that judgment would be. We need to have a time, and we've got a whole session planned, so I don't want to jump too far ahead into sheep goats. So maybe let's hold the final answer of that. But essentially, if it's post-trib, we don't leave any time for that to happen, and we sort of don't need it anymore. But yeah, I forget what week we've kind of tentatively put in for the sheep and goats. Yep, it's down there. Looks like November 10th or something like that. Okay, and no time for judgment seat. So the third one we looked at is, again, it's almost an argument from silence, but if you look through the scriptures, believers were warned over and over and over and over again about false prophets, false teachers, about error. They were warned about ungodly living. They were talking about how to deal with the present suffering. It seems like if we have to go through the tribulation period, Paul, John, or somebody would have said something about church in the tribulation period. Here's how you need to deal with the Antichrist. Here's how you need to deal with untruth. Nothing is said about that at all. Again, if this were the only one, I'd want more, but I think this does lend support. Why warn the church, warn the church, warn the church, and then just say nothing about the most difficult time the church would ever have to go through? Doesn't make sense. Okay, so now let's look at number four. And this we briefly looked at, but we didn't get to really talk about much. So we looked at 1 Thess 4. So let's go back to John chapter 14. It is a great funeral passage if you're dealing with a believer. Okay? But, and that's kind of often where we sort of use that, but it's actually a rapture passage. John 14. So think of what the words would mean in a rapture context. Okay? Don't think of it in a funeral context that, hey, when a person dies, don't worry, the Lord's preparing someplace great, and we use that as an encouragement, and we should. But think of this in terms of the rapture as we read the words. John 14, 1, let not your hearts be troubled. They were pretty upset. Life had been kind of getting interesting. The persecutions were just at the beginning, but also people had started to turn their back on Jesus. And the disciples knew. Remember John 14, 15, 16, 17? I mean, they just, boom, they're going to process through within just a day or so into the crucifixion. And so they knew that the spiritual leaders were not happy. They knew that there was some political unrest. So they were upset. So let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God. You believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. Picture what, in short little rabbit prayer. If God could speak the world into existence with a spoken word, Jesus has now taken 2,000 years working on our house. Whoa, what that could look like. I have no idea. He could also just speak that into existence in a moment too.
Better than Clearspring.
Yep. Better than Clearspring. I like Clearspring. I like my house, but yeah. So in my Father's house are many rooms. If we're not so, I mean, I told you. I go to prepare a place for you. Cool. Okay. So this is the ultimate answer to your question. Where are we going to end up? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. That is our rapture passage. Okay. He's going to come. This is what 1 Thessalonians 4 says. He's going to come in the clouds. 1 Thess 4 says he's going to snatch us. Okay, so he's going to take him. I will take you, is the way John puts it here. Okay, remember, Paul wrote 1 Thessalonians, John's writing here. Slightly different terminology, same concept. So I'm going to come again. Paul says, I'm coming down in the clouds. John says, I'm going to take you. Paul says, I'm going to snatch you to myself. That where I am, you may be also. Where is Jesus right now? Besides the fact that he's omnipresent, that's still, I can't. My brain's not big enough to understand omnipresence, with a person who you can see. So when Jesus was with his disciples, he was still God, he was still omnipresent, but they could see him in one corporeal being. So how all that works out, I don't know. But where is Jesus right now? He's in heaven, and so the verse simply says, or appears to say, where he is now, that's where we're going, not where we are, he's coming to stay here. That's what a post-trib position is that he's coming to be with us. John seems to say, we're going to be with him. Where is he right now? where will he be, you know, in just a short time after John 14 in heaven. So John 14 really parallels 1 Thessalonians 4 really well. Okay. With that, how did Paul end his little section after the rapture? Therefore, comfort one another with these words. And Jesus said, don't be troubled. So again, they're very, very parallel passages there. Where I am is a key phrase. Where is he right now? He is in heaven. So the verse says, we will go to where he is at. Not he is going to go to where we are at. So again, we have eliminated, I believe, a post-trib. Okay, and that's reason four. Questions about that? I want to pause a little more just to see. That's just saying John and Paul are teaching the same exact thing. Okay? Now, this one, I think in your notes I gave you a whole bunch of stuff. That was end of week three. So, I'm just going to review a few of these with you, okay? I've got slide after slide after slide. The whole point of number five is these are very different events. Okay, so if they're different events, they take place at different times, okay? So, the idea is that the rapture, Jesus comes in the air, returns to heaven. Second coming comes to the earth to dwell there. We just talked about that one. Okay, the rapture, Jesus is gathering his own, the second coming, and we're not going to turn to these, that's why I wanted to give you pretty extensive notes. The angels gather the elect at the second coming. What that's going to look like, I have no idea. But one, Jesus is grabbing people, the other angels are kind of collecting those. Okay, Jesus comes to reward, so part of what's going to happen to us is the Bema Seat judgment, which we have a whole time on that, so I'll just touch on it. The judgment seat of Christ. All believers will stand before God at the judgment seat, which is a reward or a lack of reward. Okay, that's the wood, hay, and stubble things. That's, you know, you may look, now we'll have to get to that to decide, is that going to be a depressing time? Is that going to be a joyous time? Is that going to be something you should be afraid of? Hold all those thoughts till we get to that. And hopefully I have it figured out by then. Because 1 week I think it's one way, and then the other week, maybe, you know, a good week, I think I've been pretty faithful. Then I'm thinking, yep. And weeks where I feel like, you know, whatever, I just have blown it so many times this week. Then I'm thinking, oh man, I'm going to stand up there and he's going to go, remember that week? I'm like, yeah, I remember, I'm sorry. So I've got a couple more weeks till I have to figure that out. But, now, we'll just wait till we get to there. Okay. Second coming, Jesus coming to judge. That we know for sure. Okay. That's two different things he's doing. The rapture, the resurrection is prominent. The second coming, resurrection, they don't even mention the resurrection. So, I find that interesting. Again, a number of these believers leave the earth. The second coming, unbelievers are taken away from the earth. We'll get to this later, but let me pause here for a minute. Matthew 24, wonderfully wrong, but popular song from years and years and years ago, back in the 70s. I wish we'd all been ready. Yeah, it's a song, two men walking up a hill, one disappears, the other's left standing still. And all these kind of things, two people in the market and one's gone or whatever. And that was used in a movie that the person who's gone has been raptured. So, you know, you're standing there at Ernst Market, and you're about ready to pay. Next thing you know, you're gone, Chuck's gone, Greg's gone. I don't know everybody else at Ernst Market. But so that's the idea, is that they're gone. No, it's actually absolutely the opposite of that. The people who are taken, and the illustrations that John or that Matthew uses, the people who are taken in judgment. So two men walking up a hill, one disappears because the Lord just came back and he's called for judgment. So we'll get to that later, but yeah, please, when you read Matthew 24, 25, don't see that as rapture verses. Okay, unbelievers remain on the earth at the rapture. Believers remain on the earth at the second coming. That's a bit of a difference. Okay, which seems to imply these are very different events. A couple more, no mention of establishing Christ's kingdom at the rapture. The point of the second coming is to establish his millennial kingdom. Okay? We're going to get some glorified bodies. Living believers at the second coming are going to stay in their same bodies because, again, they have to produce children who then can go through the millennium and eventually at the end rebel. Believers meet Christ in the air. Christ returns to the Mount of Olives. It is such a cool area when we get that. Remember, he goes to the Mount of Olives. So the Jews... Yeah, we'll go down this path real quick. So the Jews put something in front of the eastern gate to keep Jesus from going in. What was it? Anybody know? Cemetery. Because no proper Jew is going to cross through a cemetery. He could just, I'll use Star Trek, he could beam himself right to the gate. I mean, a cemetery is not going to bother him from coming in.
So today there's a cemetery in front of the eastern gate?
I think it's still there. Yeah, but in the lands right outside from that. But yeah, so they blocked up that gate. Yeah, like putting a bunch of brick in the doorways to keep Jesus out of that. But anyway, we'll get to that. Again, very, very different between the rapture and the second coming. The Mount of Olives is unchanged. The Mount of Olives is divided. Boom. Is it going to be an earthquake? Well, if it is, it's an absolutely sovereignly ordained, perfectly timed earthquake. But Jesus can also just stand there and make things happen. So, believers go to heaven. Glorified believers come from heaven. And earthly believers stay in the earth. Again, you can read these. The world's left unjudged, living in sin. So the rapture, we're gone. The world stays the same. And in the second coming, the world is judged. Okay? And let's see. Delivers the church from wrath. No signs. This one, yeah. The rapture, there's no signs. So it really could happen before we get to the next bullet point. I mean, it really could. That's the idea of imminence that we talked about the first week. There's no prophetic signs that have to take place. There's a whole bunch of things that have to take place before the second coming. Most of the book of the Revelation hasn't taken place yet. And so we've got to get that in there. Okay. Rapture's only revealed in the New Testament. Second coming is both testaments. Rapture deals with the saved. Second coming with both saved and unsaved. Satan is free at the rapture. Satan is bound and thrown into the abyss for 1,000 years, essentially. So again, just to say, these are very, very different. I have no idea why that came in that way, but... So, 6. Let's look at Revelation 3:10, because this is a passage that people go to a lot. So, we're going to go back to our initial comment was... Let's not read too much into it, but let's not miss what's there. Okay? Okay, Revelation 3:10. We're in the letter to the church at Philadelphia. Okay, and these are, again, legitimate churches in that area. You can do a tour. Randy Smith does a tour through the churches of the book of the Revelation. Several do that as well. Let's just back up a couple verses to verse 8. I know your works. Behold, I've set before you an open door. No one's able to shut. I know you have but little power, yet you've kept my word and have not denied my name. Okay, so not a huge church. No super influential people, it seems like. Behold, I will make those of the synagogue of Satan, who say they are Jews but are not, but lie. Behold, I'll make them come and bow down before your feet. They will learn that I've loved you. Verse 10. Because you have kept my word about patient endurance, I will keep you from the hour of trial that is coming on the whole world to try those who dwell on the earth. Okay, that is the main passage that we use to say that the rapture is pre-trib. So along with verse 4, this gives us a timing. Now, if this was fulfilled historically, let's look at that, because that's what some who don't agree with, I'll just continue to say my position, Those that don't agree with that will say, no, this happened in time when the Romans wiped out the Jews. And so this is what they were saying in verse 10, is the hour of trial. So the people in Philadelphia didn't have to worry about the Roman Empire because somehow they wouldn't be there. It just doesn't fit, okay? Keep you from the hour of trial coming on the whole world. The Roman Empire was a huge empire. It did not rule the entire world. Okay? So I think we can't place that in history because we don't have an absolute world power. The Romans were a great power, but I don't think that they would qualify as coming on the whole world. When in time, past, present, or future, will there be an hour of trial that's coming on the whole world? Tribulation period. We're going to see trumpet, bowl, and seal judgments. I didn't do those in order, but that's okay. And it is going to affect the entire planet. I don't know of any other time in history, past, present, and future, where we could say that accurately. Okay? So I can't just say, okay, in 432 AD, this happened, and this fulfills what the promise was to the Philadelphia church. No, there is no such time frame that I can point to. So it seems that that is going to be this hour of trial, an hour there. Can't follow the rabbit trail far. There are certain words that do mean periods of time. An hour is one of those that they use often that way. The reason I don't want to follow that rabbit trail down too far is some will then say the day in Genesis 1 doesn't mean a day. I don't want to go there. It does. But the period of time, the hour, okay, we know that that's going to be 7 years long because John's going to spend the rest of the book telling us all about that. Okay? Now, keep you. Who is the you? Is it the church in Philadelphia? Well, frankly, the church in Philadelphia isn't here, so in a sense we could say, yeah, he kept them from it because they died out 2,000 years ago. That doesn't seem to fit. Okay? The book of the Revelation was written as an open book as opposed to the book of Daniel. At the end of the book of Daniel, God basically said, write this stuff down, but nobody's going to understand it for a long time. It's a closed book. Okay? So until we got the book of the Revelation, much of Daniel didn't make sense. So he had to live through a bunch of history. He had to see these kingdoms, Babylonia, Medo-Persia, and Greek, and Roman. We had to see those play out. We had to see the things in Revelation play out. So the book of the Revelation was written as an open book. Write these things to the churches. Hence, he has not a separate letter. So he didn't write just a copy to send to Ephesus that only had the words to Ephesus. He included all of those because the book is intended for the church as a whole body. Okay? So the you is, and this is an interpretive decision, I will keep you the church, not just you Philadelphians, because that church isn't going to exist for too long. I will keep you, believers, the church, from the hour of trial. I have pages of notes of that Greek word from. Okay? Ekturon. Is that he's going to keep you through it? That's a different expression. So if we're going to live through the tribulation period, he's just going to make us tough. That's a different expression. Ekturon is out of. You're not even going to be around. I'm just going to take you out. Okay? So that is the word. John did have other options. I've got tons of notes on mine. They're all marked with little highlighting black, which says, we're not going to cover any of those. If you want to, you can. I go into very detailed on the Greek expression, ekturon, and to see how that plays out and other expressions that could be used. But the word is, I'm going to keep you from, not through. Midterm, post-trib, you are going through part of the tribulation period. I think those violate this verse. Okay? So, we're in some situation where we're outside of, not within. Okay? So, 1 Thess 1:10, if we turn there real quick, 1 Thess 1:10, because this is sort of a big point. I want to make sure we get this. Because this is one of, I think, the most clear. 1 Thess 1:10. So again, let's get our writers together. We've just seen that Paul and John are perfectly in sync with 1 Thess 4 and Romans 14. John 14. Perfectly in sync there. Now you have John telling us in Revelation 3:10 that I'm going to protect you from the hour of wrath. And Paul states it this way, 1 Thess 1, obviously it's three chapters before he's going to talk about the rapture. Let's just back up 9, because 10 is in the middle of a sentence. 1 Thess 1, 9. For they themselves report concerning us the kind of reception we had among you, and how you turned to God from idols to serve the living and true God. What a great testimony. Good job, Thessalonians. And to wait for his Son from heaven, whom he raised from the dead, Jesus, who delivers us from the wrath to come. Again, Paul had the exact same Greek options that John did, and they both use the option that says, no, from it, not through it. If there were no other linguistic options, then we would have a question. They had options to say, you're going to go through it, but I'm going to help you through it. They did have that way of wording it, and neither of these guys chose to use that. They both chose to use the word that says, delivers us from it. Outside of it. You're not going to be in it. Okay? So, again, I think Paul and John have really kind of connected in expressing the exact same thing. Okay, before we get to 7, questions about those comparisons. The idea of out from. That's one of the key passages, or those two that we use. Okay, this one, I'm using notes from actually one of my former prof. A lot of the notes are from him, and then I modified and dropped stuff and added stuff. This one was from him, and I hadn't really thought of this. That when Jesus is talking in John 14, he's really referring to a very common wedding practice in the Jewish family. Okay? So after the betrothal, not exactly like our engagement, okay, much stronger than our engagement, because a one-sentence rabbit trail here. Mary and Joseph, you look at one passage, says they were betrothed, and another, he talked to his wife. The betrothal was as serious a commitment level, legally, morally, and every other way. You hadn't slept together. Okay? But, so a betrothal, after the betrothal, here I thought was cool. The groom would then go, so essentially they're betrothed, and then she goes home and he goes to his home, and he builds a room on his house. What does Jesus say in John 14? I go to prepare a room for you. But, oh, that's cool. Okay, so the bridegroom is going to add on a new room, and then he's going to send for his bride. So at the last trump, 1 Thessalonians 4 says, we're snatched away. He is calling his bride to himself. Interesting. Just the way both Paul and John says that. So he sends for his bride. This I found interesting. She didn't necessarily know when that was going to be. She didn't know when the room was going to happen. They couldn't just text each other back saying, oh, hope you're ready, I'm on my way. So she actually wouldn't know when he's coming. So she would just have to be ready. We're sitting here today not knowing when the rapture is going to happen, and John and many others say, be ready. But that's interesting, okay? So she didn't really know. Those of you who have prepared weddings for the bride, okay, I think, Mandy, you're probably the most recent one in this room. Yeah, my guess is you had some idea of the date, the time, and the location, and everything. Yep. Can you imagine getting ready for your wedding, but you don't know what day it is? Yeah. we just have made it such elaborate things that you have to get everything ready, from the flowers to the hall to the, yeah, everybody. But, yeah, I just found that fascinating. In their custom, they did. And then everybody would, he would say, "Hey, Joe, today's the day. Let's go." And he would get his friends together. They'd make all kinds of noise, all kinds of things. So, again, we hear about the last trump. So then he's going to go, and it's time for the wedding. There's a huge feast. What do we read in Revelation 19? When the actual wedding ceremony, there's a massive feast. John calls it the marriage supper of the Lamb. So, I think shortly after the rapture, and we'll get to events, but I think we're going to go through the Bema Seat Judgment right away, because then we have our white garments, every aspect of sin is completely gone, and then we're at the wedding. Okay? I'm looking forward to that because calories don't count. Yeah. The man would take his wife and the new room and maid, and they would stay sequestered there for 7 days. Which means they didn't leave the room for 7 days. We're not going to follow that rabbit trail. But they would stay in there for 7 days, which is interesting, the number seven, because how long is the tribulation period? 7 years. Where are we? We are with our husband for 7 years, isolated from sin, isolated from the cares of the world. But that is an interesting application of, or illustration of, and then they'd emerge, he'd present her as his beloved. So we get then to the end of that, where he then presents us white and clean, and John says that. So I just think it's really interesting that the wedding ceremony that everybody listening would have recognized, Jesus and that John and Paul both use that same sort of illustration, and those point to a pre-trib rapture. Okay? Questions about... Oh, we have a little bit more. Oh, so he's preparing a place for us. I just put the... Yep, we don't know the date and time either. And the cry of command, the voice of an archangel, the sound of a trumpet. Now, does the world hear any of that? I have no idea. So at the rapture, when all this craziness is going on, I don't know if the world hears anything. You know, there's just... That's where we have to be careful not to go too far. Like the one movie, you know, your clothes are folded up in nice little piles. I really don't think people will see us just sort of floating in the air, because that's sort of not like the twinkle of an eye, you know, the rapture like that. I don't know what it's going to look like to people here, but the fact is that we're going to be raptured. So if you're driving and your passenger doesn't know the Lord, whether you have a body that just slumps over because the spirit's gone and God's going to give him a new body anyway, or the body disappears, I don't know. We'll let him take care of all that. But, yeah, so that's those. And the huge feast, the marriage supper, and the seven-year tribulation period, and then presenters are beloved. So for 1,000 years, we are the bride of Christ in a very special kind of a way. Okay, questions, comments, thoughts about that? Yeah.
The word quickly.
Yeah.
I always wonder, they all promise quickly. Is there other meanings to that word? They thought quick, we think, is it going to be quick?
The yeah. Time. I would connect that to the other passage which says in the twinkle of an eye. And I forget, science has measured what it takes for your light to twinkle in your eye. It's like that. So it's not like, just a second, I'll be there in a minute. Okay. Let me answer two parts of your question, depending. Quickly, meaning I don't know how long before it happens. So, yeah, quickly is in the eyes of the Lord. Yeah. When it happens, it's like that. Okay. So yeah, I'll read your questions two different ways. Imminence means we don't know when. Okay. Because, yeah, in the eyes of God... Eternity past and eternity future. I mean, there's really no difference in his mind. You know, so if he's going to wait another 3 weeks before the rapture, that's in God's timing, not a big deal. But when it happens, it's just like that. Okay, this I think is key. Okay, unknown time of Christ's return. If you remember from Daniel 9, there's 1260 days from the time the Antichrist enters the temple until the second coming. 3.5 years. Okay? But no one knows when Christ is coming back. So let's put the logic of that together. If we're living through the tribulation, when the Antichrist comes into the temple, 3.5 year clock starts before the return of Christ. So why does it say that nobody knows the time of his return? We would know the time of his return. As soon as the Antichrist goes into the temple and starts his shenanigans, the 3.5 year time clock starts, and so we know the return of Christ, the second coming, is 3.5 years from right now, which means that verse is wrong, and I can't stomach that. My theology won't say that verse is wrong. Matthew 24:36, it says, no one knows the time of Christ's return when lots of people would know the time of Christ's return. So his return, we don't know what it is. So this is that first part. If you go back to your black chart here, the first arrow on the second coming, that's what we don't know. That's legitimately part of the second coming. So the pre-trib, where you have the first arrow that points to pre-trib, that's the one that could happen anytime. That's what we don't know. And we actually don't know the exact day, because we don't know how long it's going to take from the rapture until the Antichrist is established and makes a covenant. Remember, the tribulation doesn't start immediately after the rapture. Okay, those are not one ends and the other starts. No, there's a period of time. The rapture happens, then the tribulation officially starts with the signing of the peace treaty with the Antichrist with the people of Israel. That's when the 7 year clock starts. So there's going to be some period of time. How long? I don't know. Okay, if the rapture happens today, then the Antichrist is in political power, probably known around the world. Okay, and we'll spend the whole time talking about the Antichrist, so I don't want to follow that path too far. Yes?
Do we know the timetable of the two witnesses?
Let's hold till we get to the tribulation. But yeah, we do have a pretty close time frame in there. Okay? So essentially, if Daniel 9 is right, which obviously it is, and Matthew 24 is right, you can't have a mid-trib or a post-trib rapture, because you will know the time. Okay? It then has to be pre-trib. This looks like it's part of the other one. I don't know why my notes got here. Suffering servants, yeah. Yeah, I think these fit with the other piece. So, yeah. So really for this one is that. I think those 8 reasons taken as a group are pretty convincing. I believe the scripture does teach a pre-trib rapture, and we can point to those issues. There are many, though, who don't believe that. So let's at least get started into 10 objections to the pre-trib rapture. Okay, some of these are just really quick. I think you still have those too, right? You don't. Well, we'll start. Okay, we'll start. I will get you notes because we have a little bit of time. And yeah, I don't know why those notes aren't printed, but I see that they're not. Okay, so just listen for a minute now. Okay, 1 Thessalonians 4:17. I told you that this passage is used often to say the opposite of what we said. Okay, let me just, so go ahead and look back at 1 Thessalonians 4. That is our classic rapture passage. We are alive, we're left, and be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. We'll always be with the Lord. The word rapturo, okay, harpizo. I told you that there's one way it's used more often than the way I'm using it. Okay, more often that word is used for groups going out to meet a dignitary and escort him back. Palm Sunday. What happens in Palm Sunday? The people go out, they meet Jesus, they lay their palm branches, all that kind of stuff, and they escort him back into town. Those who don't believe in a preacher rapture said, no, you're not using the most common way that word is interpreted. The most common way would be a post-trib. We go out to meet him, and we just escort him back to the earth. I guess it would be this way. We go to meet him, come back. That's the most common use of the word. Okay? I will agree that is the most common use of the word. When I say the word in English, kid, what do you think of?
Child.
A child. What is actually the most common word it used to be?
A goat.
Yeah. Because I remember, I think it was, may have been, yeah, Winchester, or was it some other, I used to call somebody a kid, and somebody said, my child is not a female goat, or is not a goat. I know, but kid is an established word. We actually had that discussion when we were trying to decide what to put on the sign for the check-in. Kid check-in or child check-in? I still have that ringing in my brain. These are not goats. but I lost the argument there. Child was just going to take too long. The sign was, but anyway, I lost that one. So we are very used to using legitimate alternative meanings to words. Why is Webster Dictionary so thick? Because you have umpteen perfectly acceptable ways of using a word. I would say, yes, that is the most common way, but there are other places where it's used my way. I'm not inventing one and just saying, I know every other time this word is used, it means this. I'm going to say it means this. No, we're not doing that at all. Okay, so it's not the most common. It's an absolute perfectly legitimate way to saying that a group went out, met the king, and then left with the king. Perfectly okay. Okay, that's 1 Thessalonians 5, 6. So you're in 1 Thessalonians 4. Jump over to 5. And that must not be the right reference, because I'm not seeing what I want. Let me see if I got the book wrong. Just trying to find that day of the Lord. Oh, it can't be 2 Thess. There's 5 chapters. Day of the Lord. How about 2?
5:2.
Yeah, okay. So, let me fix this, because then it'll fix in my notes. 1 Thess 5:2. There we go. Okay, here's the way this works. For you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. So what's the day of the Lord? Okay, not defined here. So what is the day of the Lord? Well, let's look at some options. And what does the context tell us? Thief in the night. Do we know when the thief is going to show up? No. Okay. So what eschatological event do we not know is going to happen? The rapture. Okay? So if we read it that way, then is there any problem with this verse? Verse 2, for you yourselves are fully aware, dare the Lord will come like a thief in the light. No. The objection that some will raise, this isn't a huge one, but it's enough that I thought I'd put that in there. Okay, day of the Lord, they say, is one event. It is the day of the Lord, not the days of the Lord. So the day of the Lord can't be two events. We're saying second coming is rapture and second coming. Those are two parts of the same event. They would say it says day, not days. I would say, again, we use the word day. In my day, we used to walk uphill both ways to school, you know. And you know that day in that context means sort of not just a particular day. Okay, so that's my response to their objection. It's day of the Lord, so it can't be the rapture. I've already mentioned this, so we can mention this easily. Okay, but no, let's look at it, because it is such a completely misunderstood section. So again, don't read rapture into this at all. Which is the problem with those who do this. Let me see my time. We're actually in good shape. We'll stop with this one. Because, I need to get some notes to you. So, let's start in 36. And this is where the confusion starts. And so I can understand the confusion because, but concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. There are all kinds of problems with that verse. Okay? So what does that verse, first of all, what does it appear to refer to? What event? What event? The rapture. Okay? Of that day and hour, no one knows. Okay, so again, what now do we not know? We don't know the rapture. Once the rapture starts, we know the start of the tribulation period, signing of the peace treaty with Israel by the Antichrist. We know the mid period. He breaks that treaty. So what we don't know is the rapture. The problem is to then assume that he's referring to the same topic in the whole section. Considering that day or hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son is the one that throws us. Okay, it's like, whoa. Jesus is God and doesn't know something. So we have to process that. Okay? Because it says, nor the Son, and we can't assume anything but Jesus, the Son of God. So then we go back to, when is there a possible time when Jesus, and I'll use the fancy term, was not using his godly abilities at his own will. Did I give you enough of a clue? Philippians chapter 2. So let's look at that. And we will have to. But yeah, otherwise that verse we're going, okay, there was a time when Jesus didn't know something. Philippians 2, by the way, made my list of top 10 verses that are hard to actually do. We get to verse 5. Philippians 2, 5. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, and don't get hung up on that. It's not that he wasn't God, he just looked like him. No, he was in the form of God. Did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself. That's the word kenosis, or that's what we call the kenosis idea, theology of the kenosis. By taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, being found in human form, he humbled himself and on and on and on, and he died. The idea of the kenosis is that there's a period of time when Jesus was here that he laid aside the independent use of his attributes. Let me clarify that a little bit, and then we'll go back to Matthew 24. We'll probably pick up with that. Okay, so when Jesus is here, he laid aside the independent use. Meaning, he was still God, but again, your brain just goes, my brain can't handle this. It's just too big. That Jesus sort of set aside some of his godly abilities. Otherwise, why would Jesus get tired in the boat and need to take a nap? God doesn't take a nap. But Jesus, who has taken on earthly body and has decided there's times when he needs to succumb to the weaknesses of that body, God doesn't die, but Jesus legitimately died on the cross. Okay, so I think when he was here, what Matthew is saying is, When Jesus walked here, he actually did not know when he was coming back. Now, is it, again, be careful, your brain. Could he click on a switch and go, oh, well, of course I know. I'm God, I know. Well, yeah, he could. But he didn't. He allowed the use of his godness. I don't like the way any of these are phrased, but when God allowed it. Okay? He walked on water. We don't do that. How did he do that? He was God. Okay? So at that point, God the Father is saying, yeah, I need you to teach these your disciples a lesson. Use your godly ability to walk on the water. But other times, he's hungry, he's thirsty, he's from the cross, he said, I thirst. Why? Well, he partly wanted to fulfill some prophecy, but yeah. So I think in Matthew 24, is simply saying that when Jesus was here, he actually did not know when he was coming back. I think the moment he was resurrected in heaven, then he is in full capability of using everything he's always been capable of. I think he's fully able to do that. So, come on, let me blip out there. And let me just see if there's anything else I want to say about. Let's come back to Matthew 24, because there's a bunch more in that passage. And the difficulty is, why would he talk about the rapture and then go something other than the rapture the rest of that section? That's the argument to those who will say, nope, you got that one wrong. And we need to address that. Because in English, don't they say start with like a, what's the first sentence?
The sentence strips.
Your first sentence then kind of tells you what's happening in the...
Oh, topic sentence.
Your topic sentence. Okay, so why would Matthew give us a topic sentence and then change topics? We'll start with that next week. Okay, and I'll have some notes for you. And, yep, I'm going to save those changes because I did that. And if you're looking for that, the information there, so there's the Valley Grace website, ministries, Sunday school, how's it all in? So that's the handouts, the notes, the audio, all that kind of stuff, and I will now stop the audio.